Hello, everybody. My name is Ana Rezende, and in this podcast, I will share my transformational journey to become a health coach. In each episode, I will address a different subject that impacts our health, whether physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, because I've learned that being healthy means being in balance. If you would like to make amazing discoveries, improve your health, get inspired, and yet find sustainable ways to live and help the planet, tune in. You are in the right place. I'm your host, Ana Rezende, and Good is What Makes You Feel Well is Mama Terra's podcast. Toma banho de cachoeira, abraça uma pessoa amiga, corre na chuva, escala montanha, contempla a vista, transcende, levita. In today's episode, I'm talking to my amazing yoga teacher, Amanda Myers. Amanda is certified Bikram yoga teacher by Bikram himself. She also holds a 200-hour Vinyasa teacher certification and a 200-hour cancer and cardiac care yoga certification. She has continued her yoga studies under several yogis in numerous workshops and retreats. She has a bachelor's in family and consumer science, focusing in nutrition from the University of Georgia. She holds a massage therapy license and a 500-hour Ayurvedic practitioner certification. Besides all that, she's a board-certified health coach. What makes Amanda's classes so special is not only her 20 years of experience in teaching yoga, but also her passion for the practice. She believes in the healing power of yoga with all her heart and has seen results in herself and many others. In our heart-to-heart conversation, Amanda shares her journey and how yoga has helped her overcome various challenges in her life. Please welcome Amanda Myers.
I am so excited because I have another amazing guest here with me today. Welcome, Amanda Myers.
Thank you, Anna. So glad to be here.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk to you for a long time. Mm-hmm. So Amanda is my yoga teacher, and she teaches Hatha yoga, and she is amazing. So I was wondering, where does the passion come from, and how is your whole story with yoga? So tell us.
Well, I'll start in the beginning, because it's a long story. I first became certified Bikram yoga teacher in 2001. The training started September 11th, and I traveled from Florida with my best friend, who was also going to attend the training, in LA, which is where the trainings occurred, and drove across the country. And obviously our country was in mourning and turmoil, and going state by state, visiting different yoga studios, being at the training with people that had come from New York, and everyone had been impacted in a certain way. It was a very fascinating experience just with humanity and all of what the resilience that people and the shared compassion that people came with. And so that was my first teacher training, and it was during a pivotal moment, I felt like, in the world. And I was in LA for 10 weeks. The training was very intense.
Wow, how many hours? 10 weeks is a lot of hours.
You know, it was not, there wasn't the same. I think yoga has evolved since then very differently, almost in a format of you have a 200-hour teacher training or a 500-hour teacher training. This was not that. And this is not even known or registered in Yoga Alliance.
Okay.
It was its own thing. Okay. And so we would start at 7 a.m. Our first class was at 8. We'd have a class. We'd have a chance to shower, have a little snack or breakfast, and then we would get into a intense anatomy lesson or spiritual, emotional health lesson. And wow. The doctors and the physicists and you know, psychologists and spiritualists came from all over. And then we would have posture clinics, and we would, you know, demonstrate our postures and learn how to teach the posture. And then we'd have lunch, and then we would come back for another lesson, and then we would have another class, and then Bikram would lecture, and we didn't go home most nights until midnight and wake back up and do it all over 6 days a week for eight weeks.
Wow, that is so intense. It was
painful.
Oh my goodness.
It was painful. But it was absolutely life-changing. Like, you cannot be... You were scrubbed clean.
Okay.
It hurt in your body. That much yoga. That much heat. You know, and it was really hot. 105.
And it was heat, like, oh, yes. All the way through.
All the way through. They didn't heat during the, you know, anatomy classes and things, but...
But it all was the practices
so,
were hot.
Yes. And I know physically what it's like to do triathlons. I've done them and I love them, and it's very hard. You know, when you hear about the endurance athletes that just do marathon after marathon after marathon after marathon, that's kind of what it probably would feel like. Just You're just going grinding through it. But it's the emotional cleansing part too that is just so deep. So, but before even the training, it was for me, I found yoga luckily. Because I needed to find yoga, and I was 25. My mom had died. I had seen her go through a horrible, horrible cancer, just ravaging her body.
So sorry.
Thank you. It was very, very raw, very hard.
Very early.
Very young.
Oh my gosh.
But I was seeing a therapist at the time, and she said to me, because I was kind of fighting an internal battle with, I really didn't want to be back at home. I had just started a career. I really didn't want to be back with the people that I grew up with because of certain, just they weren't evolving. It wasn't, and I ended up kind of getting stuck, you know, stuck back in a rut. And So my therapist said, "Have you tried yoga?" And I said, "Yeah, I did a long time ago, but you know, not really lately." And so try hot yoga. You won't be able to go out all night and party and come to this class. You will come to this class and you will realize quickly that, you know, you're either going to love it and it's going to transform you, or and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved it. And through my mom's illness and through her passing, and it just absolutely changed my life. So I ended up getting sponsored by my yoga studio. Back in the day, you had to be promoted to be in the teacher training. You couldn't just go. Your teacher had to say, I had been practicing for over a year, done a little bit of spot teaching, been dedicated enough to go, and quit my spa director job. And kind of like, I just felt it was just so big to me to go to this training. And so I did it. It was intense. It was, you know, back in 2001, it was $5,000, which was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then just living in LA and that on top of, I was very young, didn't really have much. And so it was I'm so passionate because I just believe in it so much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I have seen so much.
I'm with you because I share that passion. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. And it has supported me for very difficult times too.
Mm-hmm.
It carries you
and changes you. It just sculpts you from the inside out, and you get to know that, you know, what Bikram has been a very, there's been so much controversy with the original Bikram series is 90 minutes in 105 degree temperature, not deviating from the exact sequence, everything from the lights to the floor to the mirrors. It is a script.
Uh-huh.
When you go to training, you're literally learning to say these words over and over again. There's no spontaneity.
Okay. And you, so it is all by design.
All by design.
It's not whatever is coming through that moment.
It is not.
Okay.
And so when I went to training, Bikram was larger than life. You know, back in, 90s, 2000s, maybe even early 2010s, his sequence was... And his schools were everywhere. Bikram Yoga College of India. Am I saying that right? Bikram Yoga College of India. So it used to be this title. And he tried to franchise. That didn't go through. He tried to trademark his sequence and make it so that these schools were franchisees. Uh-huh. And that was when I was starting to look to open a school. And the costs were so prohibitive. And the way that his, had to have a certain amount of square footage. And yoga studios just don't make money. They really don't. And the overhead for having showers and all of these things and these very expensive systems. And then you're paying franchise fees on top of it. So I chose not to open a school. And I looked very thoroughly, did my due diligence, had business plans, looked at maybe 4 different spaces in 4 different locations and really tried to make it work. But so it wasn't for me. But, at the time, that was my goal. I got out of training to open a studio. And they were, logistical. You can't open one 10 miles within, depending on the population, just like any franchise. So it was very, when I started teaching, Bikram Yoga, you would know about it. You would know absolutely. You would see studios in every town. It was just Bikram or Iyengar. There was very little vinyasa. There was very little. There would be hatha at your average, your local YMCA that I was taught by a lady who had been to India and loved yoga in the 70s and 80s. And Bikram was huge, absolutely huge. And then he fell from the graces because things had come out on his, he was a very big personality, had a lot of ego, even though he always talks about not having ego. And things had happened and there's documentaries and all sorts of things. And he has pulled himself out of the limelight and franchises never happened. And literally the studios have disappeared.
Oh,
so they have called themselves now whatever they want to. And there's no, nobody to enforce, we're going to make sure you say the dialogue the right way. And it's been a huge evolution over the past 15 years.
It's literally so bad that the ego failed.
Well, it's true. It's true.
And it is true. It's very true.
That is
what happened.
It is. And unfortunately in yoga, when certain, gurus get high, he's not the only story.
Because it's not easy to hold all that fame and all that power.
No, it's not. And the human condition
it's a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. So many cannot survive. Yeah.
My passion comes from many, many, depths of my being. It comes from seeing firsthand what it did to me. It comes from seeing
the potential.
Oh gosh, yes. And I believe so much in the sequence. For example, I went to Arizona. I lived in Arizona for a while in Scottsdale. And I went back a couple weeks ago. I Googled for Bikram Yoga Studio, and I used to teach at them. I taught at 4 different studios in Scottsdale, Tempe, and Phoenix. And they're all
gone.
The studios are there, but they're different names and they do completely different sequences. Just so interesting. Big studio owners in New York City, where I also taught and went to teacher training with one of the girls that owns 4 of the studios. They have rebranded, have their own brand, have their own system. A lot of studios have introduced Pilates, a lot different things. Because at some point you feel pigeonholed. You can only do it one way and your being is saying, but wait, I see bodies and I see challenges of how it just doesn't work one way.
Mm.
All the time. And then you start to find your own creativity with it. But the original sequence still is magical. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad that I had what I had. I started that way, but as I've evolved and aged now 25, 26 years with this, it's
a long time.
It's a long time being in a body and having babies and having physical challenges to say, okay, I know what it's like to have a big pregnant belly, and it doesn't feel good to compress my abdomen, or I've had knee surgery and I can't move into this pose. I love the ability now to help people in the sequence. Mm-hmm. But so that's why there's so much passion now, because it's like it's got a second life to it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've always loved to teach it. I came out of teacher training actually feeling like I was good at something.
That is what I want to do. Yeah. 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 So tell me, you said you had a career mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So did you go to college?
Yes.
So tell me about that.
Well, we have some similarities. I went to college for nutrition. I ended up studying nutrition and print media because I thought I was going to write in magazines. I really wanted to be, you know, one of those that would be writing and going to all the great spas and restaurants. And so I didn't go fully down the path of getting my RDA, which, yeah, becoming a registered dietitian. Right. I didn't go through that whole path, and I could kick myself because I looked at going back many times. I got obsessed with having a very good GPA, and it held me back. There was another side to that. I really had already seen my mom start to spiral down. I didn't really believe in the traditional format of prescribed nutrition. So through all my college courses and learning about nutrition and food science, I thought, there's got to be a better way. And it was truly in the functional nutrition, integrative nutrition. It just wasn't in the schools at that time. And I don't know if it still isn't.
It's not, yeah.
So
I don't think it is.
Then I ended up deciding I was going to go in the spa industry because my father was in the hotel industry, and he had developed hotels, and spas were big. And I thought, that would be a neat place for me to land. And so I started working in spas, and I love to travel. So I moved from Georgia to where I went to school at Georgia, back to South Florida when my mom was sick, which is where I grew up, was a spa manager at a big spa in Palm Beach. And that was my career, you know, it's my path. And so I stopped for a while when my mom got sick, and the yoga just saved me. So I saw that through for a while. And
you stayed sane
through her
disease.
Yes. Yeah. And I left the spa industry for about 5 years. Tried to open a studio, worked through that, really taught a lot. And then I don't exactly know what happened, but I think I wanted more. I probably saw the limitations of financial success by being a yoga teacher, which is pretty sad. You know,
it is,
and there's no health benefits, and you're really an independent contractor. And you know, in my 20s and early 30s, that just wasn't going to get me anywhere. So I went back to the spa industry with benefits, and I found a way to make it work. You know, I had some great jobs. I was able to do programming, which made me really happy. So I got to develop yoga retreats or pull together, day packages that would include, of course, your traditional spa services, but some elements with nutrition and elements with yoga, and bring in some really neat people. And so I had privilege of working in Miami, in Jacksonville, in Georgia, in Phoenix, in Arizona. And then I moved to Connecticut to do a corporate position with product development in spas, multi-unit spas. And so I did great. I got everything I wanted. And then I got another privilege. I wanted to come back. Actually, my father and my stepmother had a farm in Tennessee, and they had been here for a long time. Mm-hmm. And Blackberry Farm, which is a wonderful local resort, opened a position up, and I had seen it on LinkedIn or something, and it was to open their spa. It just, by the grace of God, it worked, and I got the position. So moved to Maryville, and it was nice. And so, and that was a wonderful position. You know, I really got to really pull everything together. I had.
Are you still working there?
So I had a few spa openings under my belt, which helped me open this facility. Had experiences with teaching yoga, meeting yogis, big time yogis. You know, I used to travel circuit like once a year. More than once a year, I would you know, go study with yogis. I got to know them. I've done. I've got my massage therapy license. I have my Ayurvedic practitioner's certification. Been in lots of different circuits. So I got to kind of pull in a lot of faces for events at Blackberry. And it was all great. And I taught yoga.
How long did you work there?
Blackberry, I would say only there for 3 years. Okay. And we opened the facility. I found in my career, I have an intensity to me. And then I just don't like the day-to-day, the average grind. So I'm really good in a startup or like a reorg or something where it's planning and execution. But the daily dealings with
it just gets
old for me quick, and I knew that going in, but I thought I could stay, but my personality is just not that way. So, but I ended up having the reason why I left Blackberry, I could potentially still be there today, but I got blessed to have a baby at a late age and later age, and the workload was high, and my body just didn't respond too well to all of it. So I chose to back out
and dedicate more time to your family, and then you had another baby.
So now I'm totally dedicated to the family, and the great thing is I get to teach yoga multiple times a week. So it's been this kind of bookend, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That is so interesting. Mm-hmm. And then you, where have you met your husband?
Here. In Maryville. Mm-hmm.
And then your dad and your stepmom are still living here.
Father passed away 2 years ago.
Oh.
Yes. And that was really hard. Yeah. It is. It's hard to lose parents at any age. And I couldn't teach yoga for a couple months after. I just couldn't. It was like nothing there. So, but I came back to it, of course, always do. Yeah, my stepmom is still here.
Mm-hmm. And she's still at the farm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, it's been a long journey.
Yeah. So tell me, you mentioned that you had back surgery when you were really young. Mm-hmm. So how come that happened?
So that's kind of another way that I got into yoga. That was before my mom's illness. So I had, my stepmother had horses. And one of the reasons why they moved to Tennessee from South Florida was because we would come to Tennessee every summer and show horses all summer long. And we had Tennessee walking horses. And it was a wonderful way to grow up. I had lots of wonderful memories of riding horses and showing and being responsible for animals. And it helped me be a good child. That's not exactly why my back got bad, but I had broken my tailbone one time, and then I had...
Like riding horses?
No, I'd fallen on ice. So my low back just was not happy from a young age on. Mm. And so by the time I got to 20, I think I was about 20, I was early in my college, fully herniated and was on my sciatic nerve and went through physical therapy. Nothing really helped. I tried yoga. I tried acupuncture. And that wasn't coming from my family. I had found these... I just had this old soul with finding alternative therapies and working at a health food store and putting moxa on my back and stuff. You know, I'm 20 and my parents were probably, what are you doing? It was interesting, but luckily in South Florida there were individuals there that had these backgrounds with, you know, yoga and Ayurveda and acupuncture, and I found them. So through the surgery, fast forward into early college, I found yoga here and there, and it wasn't until my mom passed when she got sick and that therapist said try yoga. I said I had done it a few times. So what I found in yoga is when I was really, really, really into taking class and teaching class, and it was complete absorption in yoga, I had a lot of flare-ups in my back. And I had aggravated it again and again and again and again and again. And then it stopped. And, you know, my body, I think, fully absorbed the trauma and the scar tissue and everything. I still have aches and pains, but I literally cannot round my low back. It is flat as a board. And it is what it is. I can't change that much in your structure. But I don't have the pain that I used to, but it was multiple years of tremendous pain going to yoga, being in yoga, teaching yoga, trying to understand what to do with it because I wasn't going to leave yoga and I had to make it work. So I know what it's like to be in physical pain, extreme physical pain in a yoga practice.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, maybe that's what's helped my back. I don't know. Maybe going through the fire.
You had surgery and then the pain continued after that.
The pain changed, right? I would say it changed. I think that it re-herniated a few years later. I think that, you know, you end up compromising, changing your gait, and then one side becomes the dominant side. It was just, when you're that physical in your body, I just, as I was, I think that it just, and noticing every little thing in your body, yogis are really in tune with what is going on in their body. I don't know. Maybe I had to go through the fire to get out of, to find the relief. But it was, I had many years of a lot of pain after the surgery. To get to the surgery was the worst. But I wasn't in yoga then. I was not in yoga at all and not active at all. And then once I got into the yoga, I almost had, it's like I had to redo all of my spine in a way that it was very painful.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally understand because my knee was that way.
Yes, I remember.
So I didn't have any pain at all when doing yoga. I was just doing everything, and looking back now, after you said that, made me realize that maybe that is what I had to learn from this accident.
You just have to re-heal your traumas, and it's not fun.
Yeah,
it's not fun.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It is.
Because then you have to learn how to live with that pain.
Yes.
And to push through the pain.
You're right. You're right. And it sounds so... not rational, because we always say if it's painful, stop, don't do it. But there is what is called a healing crisis that will happen inside the body, is going through the process of the pain, of the trauma, of the injury, of the surgery again, and then trusting that you're not going to make it worse, but you're also going to be fully in it again. And it can be very, very aggravating to your psyche, and it's intense, but it's trusting that process, and it does happen.
Yeah, so tell me about the spiritual side that you learned in that awesome training you did in 2001.
I wouldn't call it spiritual in that training. There was nothing, I don't even think we said namaste. It was truly a physical experience that led to a deep cleansing and an inner knowing.
Okay.
So it caused you to truly say, as you got broken down, to find your own self. But there was no chanting. It had nothing to do with the spirituality, is what I would say. And then there was another side. So I think what I ended up gravitating towards through that training, and I might have shared this story in class before, Bikram, his guru, Bhishna Ghosh, was one of, I believe, 8 children. I might have that number wrong. And in India, I believe that they were a Calcutta family. And his oldest brother, Bhishna Ghosh's oldest brother, was Paramahansa Yogananda. And Paramahansa Yogananda was the founder of Self-Realization Fellowship and the SRF. And he brought karma yoga and more of the spiritual side of yoga to America, to San Francisco. I mean, I want to say it was in the 60s, but it might have been in the 50s. And he was if you were in Bikram yoga and you were going to dive into the spiritual side, you would follow the lineage, which included Paramahansa Yogananda and the Self-Realization Fellowship. And I definitely went to those temples when it was accessible for me to go. And it was a lovely experience. Yogananda, his disciples were, of course, big into meditation, very inclusive of all religion, very much about transcendental reincarnation. There was your chanting, there was your meditation, there was your how do I evolve my soul so that I don't have to come back and back and back into these painful cycles, into these rebirths, and get to Mahasamadhi, which is the final enlightenment, when you know that your soul is done and you can go rest with God. So I love that. I loved it. And
do you believe in all that?
I do. And I do too, yes,
with all my heart.
Yes. So I do. Reading his first book, Autobiography of a Yogi, is, I believe, a must do for all yogis, because it's not just talking about Paramahansa Yogananda's journey and all that he went through and his family, and Bhishna Ghosh is in the book as well. Bhishna Ghosh was Bikram's guru, and Bikram's guru was more of the physical culturalist. You know, he developed the schools for the body. So the family is obviously, I mean, if you look and they've changed the shape of history in our world. So I loved Self-Realization Fellowship temples. I went to that temple a few times.
In San Francisco then?
So when I was in LA, the closest one was, I was by the beach and I can't remember exactly where it is, but it was about an hour away from Los Angeles. And we would go a few times during the training, a group of us that just got called to it. There was a Self-Realization Fellowship temple in Fort Lauderdale when I was living there and teaching there. And there was also one in Phoenix when I was living and teaching there. There's not one in Tennessee.
I was going to
ask. No, no, no. It's interesting. You know, I feel that is my true spiritual side, because yoga has to be involved in that. You know, it has to. But it's not here, and it's not at this point of my life. But I do find that that is... You have to read the book if you've not read the book and see what all of these yogis do. And when you get to Mahasamadhi, can you imagine getting to the end of your life and laying down in peace and your soul leaving your body without pain, without trepidation, knowing that you have finished all your work and your loved ones feel and see that? I mean, wouldn't that be the...
That is the way. Yeah, that is the goal.
Yes, yes.
With no and suffering, no pain.
No suffering, no just holding on right to, yes, and at the right time.
Like
in peace and knowing freely. That there's nothing to be scared of.
Yeah.
And that probably full circle for me is really my the angels are looking down on me. I have seen death in a way that is the clasping and the holding on and the suffering. And our human existence is, we have so much suffering, we have pain, we have so much to go through, but I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that. I want to be ready for it. I want to go with the flow. I feel
me too.
Yes, so.
Oh my gosh.
And I think yoga, you know, it helps you get there. It's chipping away at your, at the outside, all the way to the inside.
Yeah. That is the way I feel too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It helps us just get in tune and understanding that there actually are two sides. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting because when I'm doing Savasana, many times I'm not there.
Oh, sure.
So it is so interesting, and they say that that is when you are in flow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that is why I started meditating, and I'm staying there longer and longer every day because I want to find that flow.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to be in that flow state
For longer and longer.
For longer,
right?
Because there is where I think we'll find
yes,
the truth.
Sure.
What we need to do and work and whatnot. So
you're right, and that is really the physical asanas help us enable to sit and help us enable to quiet the mind and get rid of the sensory and pull yourself inward in our busy world with all of our layers of trauma and to-dos and it to get there. How do you physically get there where you can sit and be still? Most people have to do very physical things,
to be exhausted
to quiet the mind. And then as you practice more and more yoga, I know swimmers, you know, get in a meditative state. I'm sure runners and, you know, any type of athlete have to get into that flow.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
to find
runners
that.
To run a marathon.
Sure,
I think they need to be in flow.
I do too. I think that part of tuning the body out, though, is not the flow, right? It's almost... And when you're that extreme in a physical sport, you know, you kind of have to tune out of your body and just be fully about resilience and big picture. But yogis don't do that. You're completely in your body. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, we're going through the fire to heal our body, our mind, our soul, our trauma. And it's very much physical, but internally physical.
Yeah.
And so I just don't know what else really does that. Maybe Tai Chi? I don't know. Tai Chi is really interesting too.
So, but tell me, back when your mom got sick, of course you didn't have all the understandings that you have now, but with your nutrition degree, were you able to help her anything? No.
And I think when my mom got really sick, I was in college. So by the time I came home, I was 6 months out of college, and I didn't really, I had become a vegetarian at home before I left for college, and my mom was from Cincinnati, and she was not going to help me with my vegetarian cooking, and she said, well, you'll have to figure it out. And so I can't tell you I ate the healthiest things, but I was steadfast to my decision. So my mom was, you know, grew up meat and potatoes, you know, she loved to cook. She was very always in the kitchen and some amazing things culinary wise, but it was very just traditional American food. So at the point that she was really sick when I was home, she probably was barely eating. It was probably more like, you know, just because she had multiple myeloma and it was a bone cancer, blood cancer that ended up breaking the big bones of the body. So there was a lot of medication there just to not be in
I'm
so
just
much
asking
pain.
Because one of the doctors that I really like that taught in my training, Dr. Josh X, he was able to, he went to school, to medical school because of her mom having cancer, like when he was younger.
Okay, okay.
He was a teenager, I guess, when she had it for the first time. And then he decided to go to medical school, and then she got sick again. But he was almost done with school, so he was able to help her.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Then she found remission with all his help.
Right.
So,
right.
And I thought that was so touching, his story.
It is. It is. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, that's why I asked. Mm-hmm. And are you still a vegetarian or not?
No.
What made you change your mind?
Oh my gosh.
Going in and coming out, both ways.
Yeah, I think that it was, you know, I was young when I did it. Probably felt called because I didn't want to hurt animals. And then I got into yoga and all, you know, and I mean, really being in teacher training, like as an intensive a one that I went to and doing that much yoga and teaching that much yoga, you have to be really careful with your diet because, you know, just you're like that hot. Like it's just, it was very, I think less is more kind of with, you know, lots of smoothies, lots of easy to digest foods. So meat never really was something. And then there's also the side of, you know, most, not most, but lots of yogis are vegetarians for ahimsa, you know, not hurting of others.
And then one of the Ayurveda and all that you had to.
Yes. And that was a little bit later when I found Ayurveda and doing going through that process. But I ended up realizing I have a lot of food allergies. So I might have actually made myself allergic to lentils because I used to eat them so much. I started having reactions to lentils, to wheat, to tofu. I started getting ulcerative colitis. I started having very, very bad, painful just episodes in my stomach. And then actually my cravings changed. And I wanted more protein. So going through food allergy testing and realizing how many issues I had and think, you know, I would love to be a vegetarian, but no, I cannot get enough protein. It does not support my body. So I would call myself very balanced eater. I don't overdo one food group now. I have to stay away from the things I'm allergic to, but it was kind of came out of a health reason more than anything.
No, that's interesting because, well, that lentils, that is new to me.
Every time I cannot do it. It's just, my stomach hates it.
And have you gone through the health coach training too? So tell me about that.
Let's see. I had my son, Anderson, when I was 40, and I had never not worked before. And I thought, and I'm very much, I've always been that person where I need to keep filling up my education cup. So I found, and it was all online, and I could do it while I was nursing and being at home with him. And it just fed me, you know, with the what I'm interested in. So I did that in, let's see, 2016, 17. And I started a business, and I was going down that route. And then...
What kind of business?
Health coaching, yeah. And I had several clients locally. And it was great. I think that the scale of it, though, is hard because you can only see so many people a week. You know, it's really kind of doing it on your own. It's eye-opening. It's almost like being a yoga teacher. You know, what really am I going to... I know I'm not going to get sufficiently compensated when I look at all the hours, but I want to help. So when I decided I was starting the business, I decided that what I would do would be open up a yoga studio. Okay. And I would do my health coaching through my yoga studio. And it worked really well. I did small groups. I had clean eating programs that I did multiple times a year. I was able to have some great retail that I brought in for, you know, Ayurvedic retail and different items that I could kind of support people with their health, whether it was nausea oil in their nose, tongue scraping, things like that. Just, you know, basic stuff, Ayurveda 101. And it worked. And we did feng shui workshops. We did all sorts of great things. And then COVID came. And then I got pregnant again, luckily. And here I'm 45 now. And so, you know, it was just this. The yoga studio was wonderful for 2.5 years. COVID came. My lease was up. Here I am pregnant again. And that's when, and my father had just passed. And things just kind of, it just became harder and harder to muddle through the water. So now I'm wondering, what am I going to do with my life? But I'm still teaching yoga. I haven't gone back to health coaching. I did get board certified.
But did you like it? Oh, you did get board certified. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I took that test. It was hard.
Was it hard?
Yeah. A lot of studying, a lot of stress. I was very pregnant when I took it.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, pregnant. So
did you enjoy the time that you were actually coaching?
Oh, yeah. The group absolutely. Coaching, the small groups. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wonderful. And it's wonderful to help someone when they are actively wanting help. When you're forcing somebody, it's the same thing as with yoga. If a new student is there and they want to be there, it is wonderful. Mm-hmm. It is wonderful. When a client comes to you and wants to make a change,
yeah.
It's wonderful to help facilitate and empower someone. But if you're doing it when there's resistance, and it's very hard. And I think, you know, changing behaviors is one of the hardest things that we have to do as humans. So health coaching, it can be, if you're employed at an office, let's say it's a smoking cessation program or something, you know, or a alcohol or drug rehabilitation program where they need health coaching, they need, you know, changing the paradigm for them. And that's a different story.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's a big part of it. So
it is. Yeah. So I love it too.
Yeah.
I really love it. I just like, I find...
I think you're going to do big things with it. I really do.
I found myself in that training like so much because I tell people that I could see both sides and maybe you were able to when you had all those changes in your career. I had a linear career as an engineer for so long, but I always felt it was not... really my thing, if you know what
sure,
I mean.
Sure.
I felt like round in a square hole kind of thing.
Yes.
But when I found the training and when I saw the curriculum and everything that was listed, it was a passion of mine. I said, oh my goodness.
This is me.
This is me.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do.
That's great.
And I fell in love with it. And that is what I want to say to everybody. Like, this is what we should have at school. Everybody needs to learn this because this is what it really means. This is what's going to help us be better beings. And then after we learn that, whatever we decide to do, we'll be great at.
Well, that'd be fascinating. What a shift.
Yeah. So, and that is, I think, it's the big change because the schools are not teaching those kids to find their passion, to use their skills to do good. They're just trying to teach them the standard. And everybody's different. Everybody has a different set of skills. And what moves them is what is going to change the world. There are so many ways we can find what makes us feel well and what can heal us. And for me, yoga is a big thing. It's especially through this surgery. It's been, I was in so much pain. Anyway.
Pain is one of our greatest teachers.
Yeah.
It is. We can learn a lot from it.
Yeah, and, that is true.
Body is a nest of troubles. So how do we learn to deal with it?
Yeah.
And take care of it.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about the poses and all the fundamentals behind, because I just love when you explain what we are healing inside, like through the pose.
Right.
I love that part.
So hot hatha is an adaptation of Bikram yoga. When I had mentioned that there was very little Bikram yoga studios left. And this, you know, Bikram yoga is a worldwide. It's not just in the United States. It's Hawaii. Every country, probably most countries, have Bikram yoga. But that has evolved. So when I had the liberty to move out of the box, I had my yoga studio and I wanted something very similar because it is what I'm most passionate about. I've done other teacher trainings and my personal practice is always Bikram yoga, even though, you know, I like flow and other things. So the yoga is very standard, 26 postures, 2 breathing exercises in this format. What I've done is change it to a 60-minute class. We used to do 75 minutes at the old studio, but It systematically warms up the body from respiratory to muscular, big muscular to skeletal, and it works the entire system, all of the entire, you know, nervous system, skeletal, your reproductive, endocrine, and the poses have, they, you know, Bikram, his guru was Bhishma Ghosh, and in India, you know, it was so different. You were prescribed postures based on your physical needs or emotional needs. Oh. So you wouldn't get the 26 sequence. You would get, you have migraines and you have issues going on, you know, your pain in your head. So there would be postures to work on your cervical vertebrae. There would be, you know, postures that to kind of, maybe there's breathing exercises to help open up your diaphragm. And that was how it was looked at back then. It was prescriptive. Bikram had all this training with his guru. He came over to Hawaii and had started seeing the need. I want to say that the Japanese culture and the Hawaiian cultures in their physical structure are closer. Like, so you have Indian physical structure. He also lived in Japan and then Hawaiian and American. And by the time he kind of moved from west to east, he was seeing the change of spine, the change of lifestyle. And then you get to American physicality and structure. And in the 70s, a lot of hard working desk jobs, the rigidity of the spine, the rigidity of the hips. Through his knowledge with working with his guru, and his guru is saying to him, you know, you need to go east, just as Paramahansa did, go east to bring it to these cultures that needed it more than the Indian culture. He developed this sequence that basically addressed all of the potential challenges that we have in our body. And if you look at a vinyasa yoga class and break that down versus a Bikram yoga class, it's extremely different. It's very, very different. So Bikram yoga works on a posture and then a rest. So I wish I could say the 90-minute class, you do the pose, you rest. You do the pose again, you rest. And then you do another pose. You ever do everything twice with a rest in between, and it takes a full 90 minutes. What we've done and what many other studios does is kind of make it like into a vinyasa class where you're doing the pose and working your breath, but it has a flowing motion. So it's really not the same original script. We do half and half, I would say, in our class. But the rest is where the body heels. You move your body into this position and you're shaping, you know, steel with heat, and the steel will bend. And then it finds a new starting point. And then you do it again. And it, you just keep reshaping. And there's postures that go from compression to extension, flexion to extension. And that process of moving your spine in all the directions incorporated with a rest is what is truly changing you from the inside out. Mm. So it's not the easiest sequence. Most people, everyone with exception, has challenges in the sequence in their body. Mm-hmm. Some people have very, very tight shoulders, tight necks. Some people have very challenged low back. Some people have challenged knees, ankles, hips, you know, but you're all going to be faced with the challenge in the class physically. And Bikram would say that's the pose that you need. So his story with his knees, and again, you know, I'm saying it from what I heard him say, so I'm not even saying it secondhand. I was not there. I don't know if it's true, but he was a world country renowned weightlifter. Mm-hmm. So he started in yoga, then went to weightlifting
in India
huh. and had won, you know, a national championship. And it might be a statewide championship, but anyway, got to a very high level in weightlifting, and he was doing squats or bench pressing. I'm not sure which one, but he tremendous amount of weight dropped onto his knee.
Oh my gosh.
And it completely crushed his knee.
Oh my gosh.
So he brings himself back to his guru, and his guru healed his knee. And part of that prescription was fix firm.
Oh.
So the pose that hurts you and challenges you so much was the pose that he included because he had crushed his knee.
Oh, God.
And so that's the thing that is, can you go through the fire to fix your body? It is not easy. It is not easy. And
there is so much in there. Mm-hmm, oh, yeah. My gosh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So every pose will challenge someone and in some way. And so there's a lot there, but that class is prescriptive based on the Western body. He went from East to West. The Western body, the Western culture, how and our challenges, you know. And so, but going back to the passion of it, I think that it is part of my duty to keep this alive and my karma to keep it alive. Because it kept me alive. And
absolutely.
It bothers me. It truly bothers me when, and I have to let it go because there's really nothing I can do about it. But when people will teach the class and they don't have the training, but at the same time, the training is, it's hard to come by. People barely trust him anymore. There's, yeah, I think now it's like $13,000, you know, to get that training, and you have to go to Thailand, and it's just, it's not even possible. How are you going to take 10 weeks away from your family and go across the country? And
but you keep teaching other people too.
Well, I don't have the ability to give a certification.
Oh, yeah.
So, but sure.
But they do it mm-hmm. your way. Mm-hmm.
So
exactly the same way.
There's some studios that it's what's happened to the sequence. It's gotten watered down and filtered and changed and it's as yoga, it's still good.
Yeah.
I think.
And do what you can. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's wonderful that mm-hmm. you feel that mm-hmm. you are mm-hmm. called to keep this going. That is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so good to feel that calling.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure. So it's truly a privilege. It's an honor to be able to teach it. I am passionate. I know that. I try to leave every class. You know, I listen to podcasts. I read books. I try and stay filling my cup with what I can give out. So, you know, if I can share one thing new a class or one tip new, you know, it feels good. I do love it. And it shows. I mean, I might be a little intense, but it shows.
Right? Yeah, but that is what makes mm-hmm. a difference, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just being a teacher. Mm-hmm. It's how you are touching mm-hmm. those people. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the magic of mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And how you are inspiring them to do better mm-hmm. and just go through the challenges, mm-hmm. whatever the challenges are.
Right.
Because it's not always physical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. No, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the way you mm-hmm. put your mm-hmm. passion mm-hmm. and the way you say mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. touches in different aspects, you know, and it makes a difference.
Well, I appreciate that you appreciate it. as you know, I tend to share a good bit of my personal life in my class because I think it's funny. And I have two little boys and I don't know boys. I don't have brothers. So it's learning this new language almost. And I come into class and I like to share some goofy things that have happened. I can't share yoga with them at this way. So I enjoy that I get to come and, you know, talk about the pineal gland with my friends, you know, as my family is going to go, wah, wah, wah. I don't even know what she's talking about. And
I had a yoga teacher back in Kansas, mm-hmm. and she was awesome. Look how interesting this is. She was actually the mayor, and she would teach in the evenings. She was pregnant, and she taught through pregnancy till, I think, the very final moments. And then she had this baby, and then when I met her daughter, she was three, and she had a little tiny yoga mat, and she would go with mom to the park and do it. So one time we went to an event, and I just went to do the sunrise yoga with the group because she was gonna teach it. And then there she is, that little girl, so cute with that little tiny yoga mat.
Yeah.
And she would do the poses with mom. Oh, that was so
the girls
sweet.
Are more into it than the boys.
Yeah, I know.
Although my boys right now are very boy. And I'm not seeing the old soul part yet. So I think the boys that get into yoga, they come into this life with it. I don't know. It feels like that. The kids that are really drawn to it.
Do you have an idea of a feeling of why men are not so into yoga as women?
Well, yes.
Is that the same way in India?
No.
Because all the gurus are men.
Yeah. It's not the tough guy, you know. Let me think about that for a second. Yoga can turn people off quickly, right? So if you go to a yoga class and let's just say, you know, there's chanting or you're starting off in meditation and it's a slow paced class.
The guys are not
It can turn you off and say, I've tried it, I'm not trying it again. And I think unfortunately that's happened to a lot of people. I know women alike that's happened to. And so you have to try again. Also, yoga can conflict with spiritual and religious doctrines. There's a lot of conflict with, you know, that you're chasing deities that aren't the right path. And I've known that a lot through the years. It's almost against a religion to be going to yoga, that, you know, the ideology of it. So there's two sides there. And then another side is it has to be physical enough, hard enough. And honestly, this is the first time in my life living in Maryville for 10 years now that there aren't half the class of men. I have always had a lot of men in my classes. That is another wonderful thing about the hot yoga and the Bikram yoga is that it challenges men enough and there's no spiritual meditation per se or chanting. It just checks a lot of boxes.
Oh.
I think that here might be a little bit more of, you know, a combination of non-knowing and it's too girly, it's against my religion, you know, a lot of that going on here. But at the same time, you know, one of my favorite books, and it's so old, it's called Real Men Do Yoga. And the cover of the book is Eddie George when he was back playing professional football and, you know, big Tennessee football fan. So let's say there was 30 professional male athletes in this book and each story is, you know, of them and a picture of them doing a pose. And that was a big game changer, made it seem a lot more possible that real men can do yoga. Florida, in my yoga practice and in my yoga teaching, my teachers were teaching the Miami Dolphins and the professional baseball team. And I mean, it was just very common that we would have professional athletes in our practice. And Bikram himself lengthened Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's career by a decade.
Oh.
He saw countless athletes, dancers, gymnasts, baseball, football, and So if you look back in the history of yoga, I mean, there's been, especially in Bikram and in hot yoga, there have been plenty of men. I wish that we would see more men. I do. I mean, I love my classes of all of our ladies, but I feel like when there's just one man, does that make them feel uncomfortable? You know, and it's just, it is a challenge. It's sad because it really does. It can impact your health so quickly. You can go from being an insomniac to a sleeper. You can go from having high cholesterol to normal cholesterol. You can go from having potential getting, you know, stents put into your heart to completely rehabilitating. To, you can change so many things if you dedicate yourself to going to yoga 5 times a week, hot yoga, sweat, cleanse, do, move that system. It is amazing, the benefits. And I've seen it lots and lots and lots of times.
Yeah.
And men, I mean, they can lose weight so quick. That stomach that they're not happy with, or that sleep apnea that they can't quite get rid of. And you have to put in the work. You have to trust it, but it's amazing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. It is so good. Mm-hmm. And I love it. Yes. I'm so glad that I found it finally. Just like going back home.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. You're going back home.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is finding the right studio, finding the right teachers, finding your time. It takes time.
Yeah.
That's.
And it's divine time.
It's divine time. I love that. Yeah. You could coin that.
Yeah. 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 Everything happens.
Yes.
In the right time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You say that when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
That is true. Mm-hmm. Very true. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. I just loved this conversation.
Oh, it was so fun. Me too. I don't get a chance to talk like this. It lights me up too.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad. So do you want to tell people where to find you? Where to go to your classes?
So we're in Maryville, Tennessee. I teach at the hot yoga studio and called the Yoga Mix in Alcoa. And my classes are Tuesday and Thursday at 8:45. They're 1 hour. And I also teach a vinyasa class on Fridays at 10:30. And I do love vinyasa. I think it's fun. I kind of make mine a little bit, I just adapt to who's there. We play, we challenge, we also have fun. And, you know, I had a Zoom link and all this stuff, and I taught online during COVID, but I don't know, you know, maybe something to revisit. At the same time, in-person studio is truly the best. It's just, it's hard to recreate that at home, you know, doing it on the internet, unless you absolutely have to. And if you absolutely have to, you should. You should find a teacher that you can teach from or learn from online. And there were a lot of those platforms that and programs that started because of COVID. So
yeah, but the energy of the studio is absolutely different.
It is
amazing.
And, you know, and I think I say this a lot in class, and just to digress for a moment, that do your yoga. And yes, the teacher matters and the space matters, but at the same time, you matter. So if you're holding yourself back out of your practice because, oh, it's not my favorite teacher, or something simple like, I'm not going to enjoy my practice today because the heater went out and it's not hot in my studio, or, you know, life doesn't always flow so perfectly. Mm-hmm. And we have to become resilient and adaptive with our yoga practice. And I have ebbed and flowed practicing in a great studio to practicing in my apartment to basically, you know, just piecemealing things together between a 10-minute practice in the morning and a 10-minute practice at night, or times where, you know, it's just not been physically possible to get what I want in. And it's just part of it. So it's we have to be. But when you find that, and at the same time, when you find that special studio, that special teacher, gosh, just don't take it for granted and just be so there. Because it can be gone in a flash. Mm-hmm. You know, that special studio can be not there next month because they weren't able to pay their bills. Or that special teacher could have a life challenge.
Yeah.
And so it's just something not to take for granted.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we need to support.
Yeah, absolutely.
The local business and the local people that are trying to do good.
Right, absolutely.
And do the right thing and just share that energy, that good energy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So if you guys listening, if you want to go to a great yoga class. Yeah, try this one. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 8:45, and Friday at 10:30 at the Yoga Mix. Amanda is really the best.
Thank you.
Oh, I love it.
The pressure's
so
on.
No pressure.
Well, we always like having more students in the studio, so I would be honored to share in anyone's journey.
Yay. Thank you so much
for
coming.
Thank you. It was a real honor, privilege, and it was fun.
Yeah, I loved it.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you guys so much for listening. It means a lot to me that you chose to be here. To help Mama Terra's mission of making the world a disease-free place for generations to come, you can follow the show, write a review, or talk to your friends about it. You can also subscribe to my newsletter. Every week, I craft good health and wellness tips, recipes, and book recommendations with love and care just for you. My intention is to give you information and resources to help you make good choices and feel well. Find the link to subscribe in the show notes. Follow me on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you again for being here. We have lots of new episodes coming up, so stay tuned. And remember, good is what makes you feel well. Toma banho de cachoeira, abraça uma pessoa amiga, corre na chuva, escapa.